if we do this, we know we've already been told the governor's going to veto it. So let's stop playing those games. Let's continue to keep the negotiations going and try and find something. If it's not a full budget, as we now are into April, let's do something that's going to be more stabilized for a number of months for, in particular, universities and human services, and let's make sure projected revenues are correct.
So if this is passed by the Democratic-controlled legislature and vetoed by the governor, as you say it will be, the Democrats don't hold a veto-proof majority anymore. Where do you expect all this to wind up?
Well, where I expect it to wind up, and I hope, as we are continuing to work, we in the House, developing our plan and taking parts of that grand bargain, if you will, from the Senate, we are cautiously optimistic that some of the parts of that that Governor Rauner has given a thumbs up to can be part of what we're working on and could be something much more stable and long term for those depending on a state budget. And I felt, in particular, as the representative for this district, as difficult as it is, sure, I would like to throw a lifeline, if you will. But what I want to do is make sure that lifeline is truly going to help and stay afloat. I don't want someone to believe a lifeline is going to be something and then that not produce anything as well. So those were a few of my concerns and as members of my caucus as well.
You and others in Springfield have been hailing pension reform as a key to solving the state's financial crisis for many years. Since the state Supreme Court struck down pension reform a couple of years ago, it's safe to say that all future reform efforts must only be targeted at future state employees and not the current ones. Is that how you see it?
Yes, that's how I see it. I think we've come to that in the ongoing discussion of pensions. And one thing that has, I think, moved forward with pensions from when this monumental debate has started and different pieces of legislation has been passed and found unconstitutional, I don't think that we see the stakeholders pointing fingers as much anymore because they know the severity of this. What I see more is cooperative. All right, what can we do? We're not going to get everything. We know that. What is it we could all live with to stabilize our pension system? And I think I see that more than I've seen before when this issue started, the severity of it many, many years ago. And so that's encouraging. But we have a new pension plan out there that the House Republicans have filed. We believe that it does focus on what we think would be constitutional, past the constitutional muster, and that is in particular that it's not affecting existing retirees. It sets up different plans, but it tries to reduce down and tries to get some of the 800-pound gorilla, if you will, off the backs of what our investments are and what the operations are of the state of Illinois right now.
Beyond the budget, a couple of bills you're sponsoring this spring impact higher ed and Illinois State University. House Bill 3490 won unanimous House approval and is now in the Senate. It would expand scholarship options for nursing students at colleges and universities, public and private. In your release touting its passage, you're quoted as saying, to combat our nursing shortage, we need to find new ways to help, not hinder, those who want to make nursing their life's work. We spoke with ISU President Larry Dietz, who for the second time on this program refuted the notion that there is a nursing shortage. Here's what he said.
And lots of studies would not verify that. There are some shortages in some geographic areas, both in the urban center as well as centers of Illinois, as well as in some rural areas of Illinois. But overall, there is not a nursing shortage in Illinois.
So is this a solution in search of a problem?
Well, no, I think if you focus on what the legislation was and for, it's specifically for Masters of Science degrees in nursing, where there are shortages, is my understanding in the review that we had. And so it's not just saying these are expanding, and what this does is it expands the number of schools that would have the opportunity for nursing scholarships, if you will, grants, but you have to stay focused on the fact that it's for Masters of Science and Doctorates in Nursing, and that's not in your average nursing degree.
President Dietz also reacted to your measure that would create free speech zones on college campuses. He said he has discussed this with you, and it's not an issue at Illinois State, but during yesterday's show, he did say that it's probably not a problem elsewhere either.
I think the intent and the spirit of the bill that he's supporting is a good intent, but I think we're already there, and I think a lot of other institutions are as well.
So where have you heard that this is needed in Illinois?
Well, the initial issue came from the College of DuPage, and the College of DuPage had a situation to where students were being told what they could, what they couldn't do, where they could do certain things, whether that was registering, whether that was collecting signatures, whether that was advocating for something that they believe in. And it came to a point to where it caught the attention of not only the board, the trustees with their issues that have been ongoing at College of DuPage, but also of other legislators. And across the country, we have seen in universities during the campaign season especially, what type of speakers were allowed and who was going to come speak but yet had to cancel because of objections of other groups. What this legislation seeks to do, and as a co-sponsor of it, is just to make sure that universities have in place a plan. And I think Illinois State certainly has had issues when it comes to making sure that we're as clear as we possibly can be with events that occur on the university grounds. And so I see it as a way to make sure and protect free speech. When we see free speech in some campus areas eroding for a variety of different reasons. And so it still continues to be a work in progress. But there's always room for improvement.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Willis Kern. We're visiting with Republican State Representative Dan Brady of Bloomington. Let's talk a little bit about politics. Although the recent municipal elections were, for the most part, nonpartisan, there were some partisan races. The normal township, which has more potential voters than the normal council or mayor's race, saw a record number of Democratic nominees, and the Dems managed to win 4 of 5 key spots, including the supervisor's race there. How should McLean County Republican leaders react to this?
Well, I think the McLean County Republican leaders should react to it as a reminder that hard work pays off. And when it comes to politics, and really when it comes to anything, hard work pays off. But I think that the political makeup of the normal township is something that should be looked at and where the vote totals were actually coming from. But Republican or Democrat, it's the reminder, it's the will of the people. And those who get out there and work very, very hard.
Are you saying the normal township is has more Democrats living in it than McLean County as a whole?
I'm saying if I would look at those vote totals, it's possible that in certain precincts in normal township, there is a heavier Democratic turnout than there was Republicans or those that would be registered Republicans. That's one area to look at. And then, of course, what the overall turnout was, this particular municipal race, and what drove voters to the polls. And then don't ever underestimate how hard an opponent or how hard a candidate works. And certainly that's part of any type of formula when it comes to winning or losing an election.
Do you think this has to do with the blowback from the Trump election?
That's possible. I've always been one who still believes when it comes to politics, there's no substitute for hard work. And the precincts, staying in touch with people, being out amongst people, getting their feedback, good or bad. And I think there's candidates that did a very good job of that, some better than others. Some may rely on name recognition. Some may rely on I've been around for a period of time. But to rest on your laurels when it comes to politics and running for office, you can't do that. And because there's not anyone who's not beatable when it comes to a certain perfect storm, if you will. And that's something that may have occurred here in the township race.
Well, here's kind of what I'm getting at. Mm-hmm. You've been in the General Assembly now, I believe, 17 years.
Correct.
And you had one Democratic opponent, your first race. and you easily defeated him. Mm-hmm. You've had no Democratic opponent since then. You did have a Green Party opponent a couple of years.
Correct.
Do you think that this coming year, 18, might be the year that Democrats put up a viable opponent against you?
You know, that's possible. I don't have that crystal ball, but being that the people have allowed me the honor to serve, beat Republicans, beat Democrats, have beaten Green Party candidates twice on occasions. I think that the electorate, even as we look in the situation they are right now, in the turmoil of what is going on in state government, while there are those that will hold you to that responsibility, that is something either of your making or something that you single-handedly can change. Others, I think, at least in my role, focus on good constituent service, someone who's accessible, someone who's down to earth, and someone who gets back to them when they have an issue. That's the other part of being representative. Very few people, when I am out and about, can tell me anything about any piece of legislation I've passed, whether it's this year or the last 17. What they can tell me is if they got a response from my office, got a response from me, we were trying to help cut the red tape of Springfield. I responded and was present at something that was important to them, their community, their village, their township, their fundraiser. The list goes on. And I think that that's all something that's very, very important. That's the flip side of a representative. That's called constituent service, and that's very, very important to your constituents.
And there's no doubt that you're the poster child, really, for constituent service and retail politics. And you also have appealed to, traditionally over your career in Springfield, to traditional Democratic voting blocks and groups like unions and things like that. Do you think that is maybe the biggest reason why you really haven't had a Democratic opponent in so long?
It may be. What I try and do, Willis, is I try and put myself in other people's shoes. And why I see something one way, I try and understand how they see the issue. And that's helped. But I know how important jobs are. I know how important the trades are in our community. I know how dedicated some of those individuals are. And that's all part of trying to be, I think, maybe a little more reasonable and open-minded in some areas. And that's all part of it. When you get elected, whatever the letter is behind your name, you're still representing Democrats and or Republicans or independents or Tea Parties or Green Party or whatever. And you've got to remember that is all your constituents, whether they voted for you or not. And I've tried to keep grounded in that way. And I think it's been helpful, but there will be those who, especially with the heat of Springfield now and the problems, indicating that policy-wise, maybe I should be somebody different or doing this or doing that. But I would counter with the fact that as we continue to try and do that, Governor Reiner did not come in and create this. He inherited a lot of this. We are trying to help navigate and give the speaker and the governor ideas and resources and things that maybe they're not thinking about as we have an impasse going on. And what was done with that first stopgap budget, again, that was committees, one of which I was part of, that was rank and file Democrats and Republicans saying, here you go, gentlemen, we have a different idea. This will take some pressure off everybody. It was our hopes that that would have yielded into a full budget. That hasn't occurred yet, but I believe we're getting closer. And, it's very, very frustrating on all levels for all of us. But failure is not an option, so we keep working towards it.
As we look forward to 2018, there already have been some political candidates surfaced. Several in the Democratic race have surfaced. There have been some congressional candidates also announced their intentions. 2018 is not the year that Dan Brady is going to pack it in. You intend to run again next year?
You know, I haven't made any decisions what I'm going to do in 2018. I've been trying to stay focused on this budget mess. I really have. And I have not laid out plans. There's other offices. There's other things that are going on. I have been named as deputy Republican leader And that has been something that has been more responsibility of trying to be in some of these negotiations and trying to bring forth with my Democratic colleagues some ideas for others who, as I said, through the governor and the speaker, who may not be thinking a certain way. And if cooler heads can prevail and find an answer and find some resolution, whether that's a full year's budget or whether that's more than just a lifeline budget, that's what we're trying to do.